Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Medical Monday, November 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from DePaul Housing Management, managing communities for seniors throughout the Capital District. On-site staff and campus-like settings, DePaulHousing.com for information and photos. Joining us today is Dr. Kelly Beers, a nephrologist at Albany Med. Dr. Beers is medical director of Albany Med's new Glomerular Disease Center, an interdisciplinary center focused on providing the most up-to-date treatment for people who have been diagnosed with kidney diseases. She also cares for patients with general kidney conditions, including chronic kidney disease, acute kidney injury, and hypertension. If you have a question, give us a call now. Get in line, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We join Dr. Kelly Beers in progress today. It's a medical Monday. It's been about a year and a half since she's been on the show. Dr. Beers is a nephrologist at Albany Med, and she cares for patients with general kidney conditions, including chronic kidney disease, acute kidney injury, hypertension. Board certified in internal medicine and nephrology, Dr. Beers has advanced training in glomerular disease. She completed a fellowship in nephrology at Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City and a residency in internal medicine at Stony Brook. And I'll tell you what, she's the medical director of Albany Med's brand new Glomerular Disease Center, an interdisciplinary center focused on providing the most up-to-date treatment for people who have been diagnosed with specific kidney diseases. And we'll talk about that in a moment. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email the program as we roll along at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Kelly Beers, it's been almost 2 years now, yeah?
About a year and a half. It was last July that I was here.
Yeah. Last July. Well, welcome back to the show. It's been a busy year.
Yeah.
Tell me about the new Glomerular Disease Center.
So glomerular disease is basically a subspecialty within nephrology.
Yeah.
And the glomerulus is the part of the kidney that does all the filtering.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different disease processes where basically the body will attack the kidney for some reason, specifically the glomerulus. This can be triggered by infections, or it can be autoimmune, like lupus nephritis. There's a disease called IgA nephropathy that's getting a lot of attention recently. A lot of different diseases that can specifically attack the glomerulus or the filter part of the kidney. And I have some specific training in that glomerular disease space. And as an academic medical center, we wanted Albany Med to have a glomerular disease center because all of the big academic medical centers in the country now have these GN centers, they're called. If you look at the guidelines for treating these diseases, you'll have these are different treatments that you do. You do this medicine, and then you send your patients to an expert center. So we are that expert center now.
But to be clear, I mean, you guys at Albany Med have been treating these same illnesses all along.
Yes, correct.
This just brings it to another level?
Yes. Yep. So we've always been treating GNs or glomerular diseases. We've always been a referral center for the area. But now we're able to give our patients just that added expertise level where we're bringing in other specialties, our hematologists, rheumatologists, pulmonary people who can help us out when we have really complex cases. And I also have relationships with a lot of the drug companies so that we're going to be able to start establishing clinical trials for our patients as well.
And this business about doing a clinical trial, how long does it take to set one of those up? Are there guidelines, federal guidelines that you have to follow?
There are so many rules, and as there should be, right? Luckily, I don't have to take care of most of the administrative stuff. Albany Med has a long established expertise with doing clinical trials. There's already a lot of trials ongoing at Albany Medical Center in other areas. And so now it's just nephrology will be part of clinical trials as well.
How long in general, and I know this has a million different answers, but in general, when a trial is done, how long does it take before you realize, okay, there's something here or it's not going to work?
So it depends on the trial. I mean, these are all being run by the companies themselves. They usually have a timeline of anywhere from a year to 3 years. We're looking at longer term data. They have a pre-specified end date when they start the trial. And some studies in nephrology actually recently have been able to, they do what's called a predetermined interim analysis where they look at the data at a specific time. And sometimes they're like, oh, wow, we already have have enough data that we can stop the trial early because we're already showing efficacy of a particular drug. And sometimes, and then they'll continue carrying it out, but they'll maybe publish the data early and say, oh, look, this is working. And that kind of helps them get FDA approval early and things like that.
Now, you spoke of IgA. I don't know what that is, but you said it's getting more attention nowadays. Why? And what is it and why?
So IgA nephropathy is a specific disease that affects the glomerulus. It's getting more attention in the field of nephrology because we have a ton of new drugs to treat it. So IgA nephropathy is the most common glomerular disease worldwide. And it's something where the immune system attacks the kidneys. People have a predisposition to develop this disease, and then it's usually triggered by something.
Genetic predisposition?
It's not necessarily, yes. I mean, yes, we don't have a specific gene where we can say you have this gene and therefore you get IgA, but it definitely seems to have some kind of a genetic predisposition that we're still kind of working out. But some people make abnormal or too many of these abnormal proteins called IgA, galactose-deficient IgA specifically. We all make them. Some people make too many galactose-deficient IgA. And then if you get an infection, like an upper respiratory infection, you can start making too much of those antibodies. They bind with they make these immune complexes deposit in the kidney, and that actually specifically damages the kidney. And there have been, I would say, in the past couple years, like 6 new drugs developed specifically just to treat this disease.
And getting back to the trials for a minute, and by the way, we're joined by Dr. Kelly Beers today, a nephrologist at Albany Med. The new glomerular disease center is open at Albany Med. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551 if you have a nephrology question today, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. You know, the question I have about trials is, okay, they see efficacy early, but isn't there a standard you have to go for a while, or you have to treat X number of people before it's scientifically valid?
Yeah, so one of the things that they determine before they start the trial is how many patients they need to enroll in order to get a certain level of power for their statistical analysis. So that's something that they, going into the trial, they know they need to recruit X number of patients for each arm. There's usually a placebo group and then a drug group. And you have to have, you know, X and Y. You have to have equal numbers of patients, a certain number of patients, so that you can achieve statistical significance. And they'll have determined that in the beginning. And they'll also predetermine how long the trial is going to need to run for. They have specific markers they're looking for, or endpoints. In kidney disease, a lot of our endpoints now are looking at how much protein is in the urine, because that's a really good surrogate marker for how much damage there is to the glomerulus or the filter of the kidney.
And those of us who have had, I think everybody has workups where they check the levels in your urine and stuff. Protein. If you eat a lot of meat, is your protein level going to be high, or is the kidney doing its job and everybody's going to be about the same if they're healthy?
Yeah, that's a great question I get all the time. So the protein in your urine has nothing to do with the protein you eat. It's just used as a marker because the filter of the kidney, the holes should be small enough that protein can't get through.
Oh.
So the protein should be in your blood. It should not get into your urine. If you see protein in the urine, it tells you that the filter has been damaged.
And so when someone gets an injury or some illness damages it, then it makes those pores wider?
Yes, exactly.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for nephrologist Dr. Kelly Beers today, the email is voxpop@wamc.org. And we've had some emails for a few hours, so let's take care of those. We'll take care of at least one or two before the first break. This is from Marion. I have been taking Ozempic for years with good results, and now I'm also taking Losartan with the diuretic for stage 1 hypertension. Question: how often should my kidney functions be tested?
So if you don't have kidney disease, but it sounds like you have diabetes, then, or anyone with diabetes or hypertension, you should just have your levels checked once a year. So that's just a basic metabolic panel. We'll check your kidney function, and you can get a urinalysis once a year as well. Anyone who has diabetes should also have the amount of protein in their urine measured, and that's something called a microalbumin to creatinine ratio. That's all guideline-based. So once a year, if you don't already have kidney disease, once you develop kidney disease, it depends on the stage of kidney disease, how many times a year they recommend that you have all those levels tested.
And if you have kidney disease, regardless of where they catch it, are you going to eventually progress to a stage where, okay, you need dialysis now?
No, not necessarily. So interestingly, 1 in 9 people in this country actually has kidney disease, and most of them don't know it. It's like at least a third of patients have absolutely no idea they have kidney disease. And the only way you can catch it is by doing blood work or doing urine. And once you have it, the majority of patients who have kidney disease actually will never be on dialysis.
Huh.
And the most common cause of death in people with kidney disease is heart disease. It's not kidney failure. Yeah. So, but there are a lot of things that nephrologists can do and your primary care provider can do to slow progression of kidney disease, help prevent you even developing kidney disease in the case of a primary care provider. But checking that microalbumin ratio is very important to make sure there's no protein in the urine, and checking your labs just once a year to make sure you're not developing kidney disease is important too.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Kelly Beers joins us from Albany Medical Center. If you have a nephrology question, I encourage you to get in the queue. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Tony Levin and Stickmen and Ringtone here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551 if you have a question for nephrologist Dr. Kelly Beers. We are taking we're taking bets here in the studio on whether I say glomerular correctly for the entire program.
So far, so good.
Batting 1,000, right?
Yeah, you're doing great.
There's plenty of time. Don't worry. All right, this email from Brendan. A few patients have asked about investigational peptides to restore kidney function. These include SS31 and MOTS-C. Is there promise of restoring kidney function or limiting the damage from cardiovascular disease / hypertension from peptide therapy? Thanks for considering the question. I don't even know what I just read.
I have no idea.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Brendan, I'm sorry about that.
Sorry, Brendan.
You've stumped the band. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. What is it about diabetes and or hypertension that causes issues with the kidneys?
So diabetes is actually the most common form of glomerular disease in this country, which people don't even necessarily realize. Diabetic nephropathy is, it damages the glomerulus, so it's a glomerular disease. And what happens is when you have really high blood sugar, that is going to basically put strain on the kidneys. It's a lot of pressure on the glomerulus, and that pressure on the glomerulus will affect the cells in the glomerulus. People that have diabetes initially get what's called hyperfiltration. So the kidneys are working really hard to kind of overcome this high blood sugar. And then eventually they get to the point where they underfilter and the filtration rate goes down. And that's when you start seeing the symptoms of kidney disease.
Now, there are two, right? Most of us have two?
Yes.
Okay.
Two kidneys.
You could tell I'm in radio and have no idea. But all right, well, they have two. Are they going to be damaged the same?
Yes.
They are?
Yeah. People ask me that too all the time, like which of my kidneys is damaged? It's both of them.
Really?
Unless something happens where you have like an actual like physical injury to a kidney. Some people are born with one kidney. One of my cousins told me this weekend he only has one kidney. Unclear if that's true or not. We're going to figure that out.
You're going to get him under the old x-ray machine to find out?
You need a doctor. But yes, most people have two kidneys, and if your kidneys are damaged, they're damaged equally.
But you can get by with one healthy one,
correct.
Right?
Yes.
It makes you wonder why there were two. What about evolution put two in there?
It's good to have a backup. Right. Kidneys are important.
Well, we should have a backup heart, and I need a backup brain. I mean, the number here is 800-348-2551. We'll blast through a couple of more emails, and then we'll hit the phones. This is from Barb in Schenectady. Kidneys with thyroid issues is the subject heading. For someone with hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's disease, what precautions should be taken to avoid kidney issues? What testing, how often, et cetera?
So having autoimmune disease like a Hashimoto's does put you at risk of other autoimmune diseases, and some of the kidney diseases are autoimmune, but there's no direct link between having thyroid disease and having kidney disease. I think the most important thing, you know, keep your thyroid levels normal, make sure that you don't develop diabetes. If you have high blood pressure, keeping your blood pressure normal. A low salt diet is better for your kidneys than eating a lot of salt.
Why?
Because the salt's just hard on the kidneys.
Really?
It's bad for your heart too. Salt isn't good for you.
Really?
Do
you eat a normal amount of salt? Do you get petrified by all the things you know?
No.
No?
No, I don't think so. 2,000 milligrams of sodium should really be the max for most people.
All right. The number here is 800-348-2551. Jill in Mountainville writes, I'm in my early 70s and have been prescribed, chlorthalidone.
Good job.
All right. For my elevated BP, systolic in the 130s, I've been advised to stop my calcium and D3 supplements while taking chlorthalidone, but a recent DEXA scan showed osteopenia in my hips. Help, what can I do? And that's from Jill.
So chlorothalidone can cause you to reabsorb calcium, which is probably why they told you to stop taking the calcium and D supplements. I would definitely talk with your providers about the osteopenia, get your vitamin D and calcium levels checked. You maybe do need to be on calcium and D, and maybe you don't, but I don't really know your case individually. But if your calcium levels are normal and your kidney function is normal, then treat that osteopenia.
We're joined by Dr. Kelly Beers, a nephrologist at Albany Med, and the new glomerular disease center is open at Albany Med. When did you guys start that up?
So I think over the summer, sorry, Cassie. Yes, we officially launched over the summer, and we are, Dr. Mehta and I are running it together. We are seeing patients. We have a specific GN center dates where we each have about a half a day a month where we're specifically seeing our GN patients. And during the GN center, we have a pharmacist who's actually with us in the room. So the pharmacist comes and sees the patients with us. And so you get that interdisciplinary care with us. And we also see patients outside of the GN center, just in our regular clinic hours in multiple locations. But the GN center specifically is at our location at 25 Hackett Boulevard.
All right, let's now go to the phones, and we'll begin in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim, you're on.
I guess you already answered the question. I was going to ask what part of the kidney is most affected by diabetes. I guess it's the glomerulus.
Yes. So the glomerulus is affected first, typically, and then the rest of the kidneys can become damaged as a consequence of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, Jim, did you get a new phone? Sounds fantastic today.
It's this smartphone. I have all kinds of trouble trying to get on to it. It puts all kinds of information I don't want out there before it gets to what I want.
Well, I hear you. Well, thanks, Jim. I appreciate the call. It's 800-348-2551. We'll just blast through some emails here. We have so many. This is from Deb. Is there a specific diet to reduce kidney stones? My doctor had her first kidney stone. No, my daughter. See, she kind of shortened the word daughter to DTR, so I didn't know. My daughter had her first kidney stone at age 12. Does that mean after 12 years of recurring kidney stones that she has kidney disease? Any current studies on minors having kidney stones? Also, is kidney disease genetic? And that's from Depp.
So it depends on the type of stones. And I will definitely want to preface this by saying I am not a pediatrician. I'm not a pediatric nephrologist. The kids do different things. So we have a wonderful pediatric nephrologist at Albany Med, Dr. Lissman, who I recommend that you go and see to get his opinion on all of this. There are different types of stones that are formed. There, especially if you're forming stones in childhood like that, I think that she definitely needs to be seen by a nephrologist and or a urologist to have her urine analyzed to see what kinds of stones she's forming. And then once you know the kinds of stones, then they can give you dietary recommendations. But also it's important to drink a lot of water. I tell my patients with stones to drink 3 liters of water a day. The more water you drink, the less time it gives for the urine to sit in the kidneys and have time to form stones.
So is there too much water? Can you drink too much for your kidneys?
You can drink too much water. If you overwhelm the ability of the kidneys to dilute your water, then the kidneys can only dilute urine down to a certain concentration. And you can't just pee out free water. So if you are drinking too much water, that will actually lower the sodium levels in your blood because your blood basically is too diluted.
How will you know that, though? I mean, I know a lot of people who swill water a great deal.
Yeah, I mean, the only way to know for sure would be to get your blood tested. Severe hyponatremia, which is low sodium levels in the blood, can be very symptomatic, but it would have to be very severe. Most people with normally functioning kidneys who are also eating are going to have a hard time getting themselves that low.
Yeah.
But there is such a thing as, it's called psychogenic polydipsia. And this is people drinking like 5 to 6 liters of water a day. They can get their sodiums down too low.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for nephrologist Dr. Kelly Beers from Albany Med, 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. Back to kidney stones for a minute. They are formed. Why?
Well, it depends. So there's different types of stones that you can form. And some people have a genetic predisposition to forming stones. Some people have abnormal levels of certain things that will lead to stone formation, The most common kinds of stones are calcium oxalate, could be diet related, but usually there's something going on just with the way you metabolize things that cause you to form stones.
Completely different than, say, the formation of gallstones.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
And there is still some mystery?
No, I mean, we pretty much know why stones are formed.
All right. 800-348-2551. It seems mysterious to me.
I find them boring.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like stones.
Oh, boy. All right, Joe.
Some nephrologists love kidney stones.
Really? And you find them boring?
I love the glomerulus.
And you don't like to work with kids. So now we know a couple things about
Dr.
Kelly
Beers.
You know,
I like kids. I just don't want to be their doctor.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
Believe me.
I tell my pediatrician that all the time. Pediatricians are amazing. I don't know how they do it.
Well, they're probably well-medicated themselves. All right, Joe writes in, a few years ago, I had a CT for another issue, but the report noted there are multiple tiny, hypodense right renal lesions, too small to definitively characterize by CT, though statistically likely represent cysts. There are left renal parapelvic cysts versus pelvocalciostasis. Good Lord. A week ago, I had blood work done. Creatinine 0.53L, BUN 17, BUN / CREA ratio 32.08H, total protein 6.2L. Is there anything I should be concerned about? Any further tests? Admittedly, I don't drink enough water. I have no symptoms. I'm retiring as soon as the show's over. I have no idea what I'm reading. All right, what's up? Do you know what that's all about?
Yeah, I understood every word.
Okay.
So I also get referrals all the time where people had some kind of imaging done and had incidental finding of kidney cysts. Cysts on the kidney are super, super normal. There are different autopsy studies that suggest that like 80% of people have cysts in their kidneys when they die.
Yeah.
They usually don't mean anything at all, especially if they're really small. My only question would be if there's like a lot of them on both kidneys, that could be a problem. But you know, you can do an ultrasound. It was a CAT scan. They were instantly found. You can have your primary order a renal ultrasound, which will better define the cysts on the kidneys and see if there's anything to actually worry about. Usually it's not. If it's just simple cysts, you don't have to do anything. As far as the blood work, so the creatinine was actually very low, a creatinine of 0.5. This was a man, right?
Is that good?
Yeah.
Joe, I think that was a woman. Actually, Josephine, I believe.
Oh, okay. Either way, 0.5 is a very low creatinine. And a low creatinine means your kidneys are working well. So creatinine is a marker that we use to estimate kidney function. Creatinine is something that the way the kidneys eliminate it from the body, it's predictable. So if the creatinine goes up, it tells us the kidneys aren't doing a good job of cleaning the blood. 0.5 is a very low creatinine, very normal.
Yeah.
The BUN also is normal, 17. The ratio BUN to creatinine is a little high because of the fact that the creatinine is low. So I wouldn't worry about any of that.
I'm going to take your word for it on all of that. Jay writes in, I have gout. I now take 400 milligrams of allopurinol. The kidneys filter uric acid, the cause of gout. Is there any way to quantify how much uric acid is filtered by the kidneys and how much is due to overproduction and how much is due to kidney underfunction?
So if you don't have kidney disease, it wouldn't be that the kidneys aren't getting rid of it. Yes, you can do what's called a fractional excretion of uric acid. I don't think anyone would do it because it wouldn't necessarily change management. It would require you collecting your urine for 24 hours to measure how much the kidney was actually excreting. It would be a fun academic process, but it wouldn't really change medical management. Allopurinol is going to decrease the production of uric acid. And if the kidney function is normal, then it's probably just you're making too much uric acid.
Dr. Kelly Beers is our guest today from Albany Med. If you have a nephrology question, give us a shout. 800-348-2551 is the number. Lauren is in Newburgh. Hello, Lauren.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Doctor,
thank you for sharing all your knowledge. I appreciate that. I just am calling because my mom died of kidney cancer. Of course, she didn't discover that she had cancer until it was already metastatic. And one of the concerns I have is just in my blood work, sometimes my calcium goes up, sometimes it goes down. And I just didn't know if going to get like a kidney ultrasound is a little bit being like overreactive. I'm 58. I didn't know if it made sense to go get one done or if I should just let it go.
Well, first, I'm sorry about your loss and your mom. Kidney cancer is not usually considered to be hereditary. It's more environmental. It's smoking is a big risk factor for kidney cancer, so make sure you don't smoke. And you would actually probably have blood in your urine. if there was anything going on. So I would say I don't think you need an ultrasound or any kind of imaging, like, just to look for something. But if your doctor is just checking your urine once a year and looking for blood, that would be helpful. If there was blood in your urine, I would definitely do a renal ultrasound.
Lauren.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. It's Nephrology Today with Dr. Kelly Beers, who's been very busy at the new glomerular disease center at Albany Med. Now, this is separate from the hospital. This is on Hackett, you said?
Yeah, so actually we see all of our patients outside of the hospital, Albany Med faculty physicians. Our main nephrology office is on 25 Hackett. And then we also see people in Latham. We see people. I see people in Clifton Park. A couple of my colleagues go up there. And there's a Washington Avenue Extension office as well.
All right, let's go back to our emails, and then we'll jump back to the phones here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Sherry writes in. Subject heading, viral illness, intermittent elevated protein. I have a teenage granddaughter who developed a fever and an unidentified viral illness in August. Since then, she's been feeling ill on and off, stomach pain on and off, and an elevated urine protein. They have been checking her urine protein weekly. They have looked at possible autoimmune disease along with myriad other tests. Now her urine protein ranges from a low of 5 to a high of just over 100. She has no other symptoms. No swelling, no bruising. She is seen at a prominent children's hospital in Ohio. How could glomerular damage caused by a viral illness, the current working theory, be intermittent? It seems either they have been damaged or not. Can you explain it?
Yeah, so I don't know what those numbers are, the like 5 to 100, because the way we quantify proteinuria is looking at a urine protein to creatinine ratio. And so we... like a normal urine protein to creatinine ratio is anything less than 300 milligrams or really like 200 milligrams. And we get concerned if it's above 500 milligrams. And that's for the ratio. Just a urine protein on itself doesn't really mean anything. You need the ratio. As far as the virus causing intermittent proteinuria, I'm guessing that this granddaughter, is that what it was?
Granddaughter, yes.
I'm guessing she probably has IgA nephropathy. So the one I mentioned earlier. So what happens with IgA nephropathy is that you can develop a viral illness. That viral illness triggers a production of this IgA. IgA is a part of our immune system that fights off your upper respiratory infections and mucosal infections. And if you have these galactose-deficient IgA, too many of those, you get an illness, your immune system starts trying to fight off the illness, you make a lot of IgA, you get all of this abnormal IgA that causes the immune complexes, deposits in the kidney, and causes problems. Usually people see blood in their urine. You sometimes can see it with your naked eye. Sometimes it's just if you check the urine and then have increase in the protein in the urine as well. And then the way that's treated is usually by suppressing the immune system to prevent making all of this extra IgA, as well as giving medications to take pressure off of the kidney and the glomerulus to help the kidney heal.
So viruses then can they cause permanent kidney damage?
So this can cause permanent kidney damage, absolutely, because if you have this recurrent damage to the kidney, then it's going to eventually cause like scarring, and people with IgA nephropathy can end up needing kidney transplant or dialysis.
Has the COVID pandemic resulted in a lot of kidney damage?
There is some data looking at that. There was a lot of IgA triggered by COVID, and there have been other kidney diseases that were triggered by COVID. So yeah, I would say that there was definitely an uptick. There were a lot of papers coming out when COVID was kind of new in the first few years, looking at things specifically that seemed to be related to COVID.
We're joined by Dr. Kelly Beers today, a nephrologist at Albany Med. Let's grab one more call, then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones and the emails till the end of the show. We got a long time. Hang in there if you're on the line. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Akasha in Ashfield, Mass. You're on.
Hi, thank you both for being there. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
I have been diagnosed with SIADH, and there's not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of stuff I can do every day. We're doing, like, I'm making sure I'm eating more salt. I'm making sure that when I drink water, instead it's with juice, and I'm trying all this stuff, but there's not a lot of research out there that I know of.
So first of all, what are we dealing with here?
Can you help me with that?
So, SIADH is syndrome of inappropriate antidiuretic hormone. So antidiuretic hormone is something that we all have in our brains. It gets released to tell the kidneys to reabsorb water. So if your sodium levels in your blood get too high, if your blood gets too concentrated, then your brain tells your kidneys reabsorb water to get it down. Some people have too much ADH, meaning that they're basically reabsorbing water prematurely, and so that lowers the sodium levels in the blood. I'm not sure who told you to eat more salt, because that's actually not usually the treatment for SIADH. As you may have heard
they
me say,
I think they were just throwing in like anything at it.
Sure. Yeah. So typically when people have SIADH, one thing that you need to do is you need to limit your fluid intake in general. Even juice is going to be considered fluid. You want to be basically drinking less than what you're urinating out, because your kidneys are going to try to hold on to too much water, and that's going to lower your serum sodium levels. And then I had mentioned earlier that the kidneys are only able to dilute the urine to a certain level. If you have too much ADH, then you can't dilute your urine that much at all. So one thing that can help is to eat more solute. So basically eating more stuff. The only reason that eating more salt would help is because you're giving your kidneys salt to get rid of water with. So really just by eating anything that can help. I tell people not to eat more salt, because usually salt makes you thirsty and then you want to drink more.
Oh,
and you really need to limit the so any stuff that you can eat that's not going to make you thirsty can help, and then limit the amount of fluid that you're taking in.
Akasha, we have to take a break, but do you want to follow up very quickly?
Okay.
Go ahead if you want to follow up.
Yes, I have been limiting them, and the numbers go dangerously low. So I'll just keep doing research on with my doctor. And
there's also something called urea you can look into.
Urea?
Yeah.
What will that do?
That you can take urea. That's a source of solute that can help get rid of some of that extra water. So ask your doctor about urea.
Absolutely.
Akasha, thanks for the call. We'll take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's a Medical Monday. It's Dr. Kelly Beers. Glomerular. Just say it with me, okay? Glomerular. Sonny Rollins on Impulse. I think that is from the Alfie soundtrack, if I'm not mistaken. Remember that movie, Alfie, right? 800-348-2551 is the number. We're joined by Dr. Kelly Beers, a nephrologist at Albany Med. And a couple more emails, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from, it's a long email. Oh, no, I did this one from Sherry. Okay, well, Sherry's good. This is from Lou in Perth, New York. Listening to the show while driving, it's almost like you're talking to me. For the past few years, I've been going back and forth with my primary care and urologist regarding a kidney pain that seems to come and go. A recent urine sample when I did my blood labs about a month ago gave me a result from my urine creatinine of 163, which comes in as abnormal on the scale. My annual neurologist visits, I'm assuming nephrologist visits, but I'm not sure, which are preceded with a kidney ultrasound, show some inflammation, but nothing remarkable. How can I differentiate between back pain and kidney issues? I'm slated for an upcoming visit to the neurologist in December, but I'm thinking I may need to see Dr. Beers on today's radio program. Well, we don't do business like that on the show, Lou, but thanks in advance for your help. All right, go ahead.
I'm thinking urology appointment, actually, because he said he has a urologist and he's doing ultrasounds. They usually do the ultrasounds beforehand. So interestingly, the kidneys themselves don't have direct innervation. I mean, they don't have nerves. So the only way the kidneys will hurt is if they are so swollen from an infection or inflammation that they're pushing against other things where there are nerves, or if you're passing a kidney stone and it's going through places that also have nerves. So typically your kidneys don't hurt. And if you have kidney problems, it's asymptomatic, unfortunately. As far as the urine creatinine number, there's actually no normal urine creatinine. The lab will tell you it's abnormal. But a high urine creatinine, if you really think about it, I had mentioned that the kidneys get rid of creatinine and we use it as a marker. So if the creatinine in the blood goes up, that means the kidneys aren't working well. But if you have a lot of creatinine in your urine, then it probably means your kidneys are working well because they're getting rid of the creatinine.
Okay.
But you would need to look at the serum creatinine to really know.
So Lou should just do his regular appointments
so
and be
go
cool.
Go to the urologist. If you want to come and see me, I'm happy to see you, Lou.
All right. Number here is 800-348-2551. Let's jump back to the phones with Dr. Kelly Beers. And it looks like Janice in Middlebury, Vermont is next. Hi, Janice. You're on.
Hi. Hi. I'm calling because my daughter was recently diagnosed with kidney cancer.
Oh.
On one kidney, she had an 11-centimeter tumor, which she had her kidney removed last week. My question is about her prognosis on the other kidney, and she does have diabetes. She started out with gestational diabetes and then developed into full-blown diabetes. So, is she going to be okay with her one kidney, and what should she be doing to keep that kidney healthy?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm so sorry to hear that. I hope she's doing okay. I have a lot of patients who have... She's doing okay. Good. I have a lot of patients who have one kidney because they had a kidney removed because of kidney cancer. And for the most part, what's going to happen is that remaining kidney is going to try to work to make up the difference. It's almost like somehow the other kidney knows that its friend is missing and it starts working harder. If you have underlying kidney disease before you have a nephrectomy, it's called, before the kidney is removed, then you won't necessarily get back to normal kidney function. Sometimes a nephrectomy will kind of unmask underlying kidney disease that you didn't know you had. It can take a good amount of time to kind of reach what the level is going to be after having a kidney removed. I tell people it can be like a year before we know what your new baseline is going to be. That being said, the urologists who take the kidney out are typically checking the blood work. Because she only has one kidney, by definition, even if her kidney functions normal, she still has chronic kidney disease. So she should do all the things to protect her kidneys, like avoiding NSAIDs, Advil, Motrin, Aleve, ibuprofen. All of those things are bad for the kidney. Making sure that she's not eating too much sodium. There's evidence that doing more of a plant-based diet as opposed to an animal-based diet can also slow progression of kidney disease. So that's something I recommend to my patients as well. And if she has any questions, she has kidney disease, she could definitely see a nephrologist in addition to her urologist.
Janice.
Okay. Thank you so very much.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot for the call. So if somebody has kidney cancer and has a kidney removed, what is the likelihood that the other kidney is going to get kidney cancer?
Not very good.
No?
Usually it's just an isolated thing.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. Number's 800-348-2551. We'll go to Ted in Shelburne, Vermont. Hello, Ted. You're on.
Hi there, and I thank you both very much. And I have my issue really is fatigue, and I can't get answers for a long time, decade. I haven't had any real medical adventures except deep vein thrombosis. I had some wicked clots around the beginning of COVID. Didn't have COVID ever, and I've always been immunized. But I'm irked by, I can do most everything. I happen to have just had an 86th birthday.
Well, congratulations and happy birthday, Ted.
Thank you. And I get the idea that I'm above average, so I shouldn't keep asking questions, but I keep having more to do and being slow about getting it done. I have taken, and you've mentioned, now I'm looking at creatine with just the one N toward the end of it, creatine. I'm sure it's the same thing we're talking about. And my doctor has recommended that I take it. I've been a little bit off and on about it as a supplement, and I've recently read some more about it, or heard. Anyhow, I'll let you have a chance to say something, and then I can go on a little bit more. I have not had urinalysis for a long time.
Okay.
I've been doing everything the doctor says, and my heart and lungs sound fine when they listen, and I've had blood tests and so on, and I've been wishing I didn't have this fatigue for more than a decade.
All right, Ted, let's have the doc say something.
So,
good idea.
So if you're having regular blood work, they would know if you had kidney damage from your regular blood work. And
yep.
The only time that kidney disease causes you to be fatigued is when you have stage 4 or 5 kidney disease. Usually fatigue from kidney disease is a sign that you need to actually start dialysis or have a kidney transplant. You need to have really severe kidney disease to have it cause you to have fatigue.
So,
okay. I mean, I expect to start whining about a urinalysis, though, just as as a check.
Absolutely.
On it, because I haven't had that, and I'm really wanting to go for more tests on more topics. I appreciate this, though, because I've been specifically thinking kidneys lately, and I have normal salt. I could do less, I keep saying, but I don't do excess. I think I have good water drinking, not much exotic stuff drinking, a little coffee.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think you've done it for me, and I will get your analysis, and I will be assured that as far as you can tell from what I've blathered on about, that nothing is indicating kidney for me, but I'm going to keep looking for something that is just not calling me lazy.
Dude, you're 86 years old. I mean, you know, you can get fatigued a little bit once in a while. It's all right. You're doing great.
Well, that's what they keep saying, but I've got stuff to do that ain't being done, and okay, I'm the one in charge here.
All right. Well, Ted, thanks a lot for the call, and again, happy birthday. Now, Ted said, well, you know, he mentioned creatine and then creatinine. Are those the same thing?
They are not the same thing. So creatine is a supplement, and creatinine is something that is made in our muscles. And people take creatine in order to try to build muscle.
They sell it at the gym.
They used to back in the day, all over the place. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Let's go back to our phone lines with Dr. Kelly Beers, and we'll go to Bob, who is apparently in his truck. Hello, Bob. Where's the truck?
I'm still in Massachusetts, almost in New York State.
Okay.
My name is Bob. I'm a 72-year-old man. Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Kelly.
Of course.
Here's my problem. I don't know if it's my kidneys or my bladder. A year and a half ago, I had my colon operated on. I had a tumor inside the colon, and they got everything good. Everything's good. But ever since then, I go to the bathroom quite often. And when I urinate, it's like if I drink a cup of coffee, a bottle of water, soda, whatever, I have to go. I mean, really quick.
Yeah,
I mean,
so that could be your
not
prostate.
Very long after I...
Really? It could be prostate,
could be your prostate, yeah. As men get older, your prostates get bigger. And as your prostate gets bigger, it can prevent you from emptying your bladder completely when you urinate. So then when you drink more, then you're basically getting... Your bladder's getting full faster because it wasn't completely emptied. So the way to know if that's what's going on would be to get imaging done of your bladder before and after you urinate and see if there's any retained urine in there.
Okay, good. I will. All right.
Good luck.
Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Bob, drive safely. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Eric is in Canaan, New York. Eric.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a lithium-induced kidney damage. I was on lithium for 40 years. My GFR is 39. And I'd like the doctor's opinion on if there's any way to reverse some of my kidney damage.
So, yeah, lithium's tough. Unfortunately, lithium-related kidney disease, it's not only is it not reversible, but it actually continues to worsen after you're off the lithium, which is a real bummer. So it sounds like you probably have a nephrologist because you know what your GFR is. That's usually a good sign.
I've been seeing a nephrologist for 20 years.
Yeah, good. There is a medication called Amiloride that can slow some of the progression of the lithium-induced kidney damage, which you could ask your nephrologist about. But that's the only thing that I know of that I've tried with some of my patients with lithium disease. But typically, unfortunately, it just progresses.
Well, the only thing I would comment on is my GFR, I'm only using GFR, not creatinine as a standard, has been stable for almost 7 years.
Oh, great.
It hasn't gone down at all.
Fantastic.
My nephrologist, when I hit 45 GFR, switched me to Depakote, which I'm on now, except now my Depakote just gave me an acute pancreatitis, and I have to get off of that now too. So it's a never-ending story, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's tough.
You said lithium disease, that's a thing?
Lithium-induced kidney disease, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, lithium is it's directly nephrotoxic, meaning it damages the kidneys.
Now, I mean, as I understand it, from the 60s and 70s, That was prescribed a lot to people who had manic depressive and other issues.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because it works.
Do you see this a lot?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Lithium works really well, but unfortunately, it will damage the kidneys. It's almost, you know, universal that people that are on lithium, especially for a long time, will have kidney disease. It affects the way the kidneys will concentrate urine as well. And yeah, for the most part, there's some people, unfortunately, that just have to be on lithium. It's the only thing that works for them. And there's some people that that can switch to other things and do okay. And lithium also, if you take too much of it, it can also be very damaging. Well, I mean, it can kill you, and then you have to dialyze it out. So I've had to dialyze people for acute lithium overdoses before.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines here in the remaining moments with Dr. Kelly Beers, nephrologist at Albany Med. We'll go to South Glens Falls, and it's Maureen's turn. Hello, Maureen.
Hello there, and thank you for taking the call. And I have a question, and it's really bothering me right now. I'll give you a quick story. About 5 years ago, I had a kidney stone. It perforated my ureter, but they did get it out of there. And then shortly after that, they had to put a stent in because I wasn't urinating properly, and then I developed hydronephrosis, and weren't able to get that down, and they thought I had another stone, but it turned out that there's some other thing blocking the ureter at the kidney, and that's why the hydronephrosis. So my GFR had been 60, and now it's down to about 30. And I just had some blood work and a urinalysis, and the creatinine was like 2 point something off the chart. And I'm thinking, you know, is this really dangerous? And I am supposed to have a resection on my intestine because I had some terrible bouts of diverticulitis, but I have to put that off until we get this kidney thing straightened around. And I'm just wondering what you would do about this hydronephrosis, and is it safe to have the surgery? Doesn't that?
All right, we only have about a minute left, Maureen.
Okay.
All right.
So, Maureen, I'm assuming you have a urologist who put the stent in, and it's the same side that had the stent where you have the hydronephrosis?
Well, we don't know. I just had it just now. I just had another ultrasound to see what the size was.
Yeah. So, if there's a hydronephrosis and it's the side that had the stent, it probably is that there's another blockage and that they're going to have to go in and open that up again. So that'll be urology. Yeah. A lot of times once you do that, the creatinine will come down because obstruction can cause kidney injury, which is usually reversible. And if you don't already have a nephrologist who's helping your urologist out, I would definitely recommend you see a nephrologist as well.
Maureen, thanks a lot for the call. Very quickly here in the last 15 seconds, Bill in Lake George writes, is long-term serum sodium 130 to 135 a known health risk factor?
So, yes, having chronic hyponatremia, that means low serum sodium levels, has been associated with a shorter life expectancy. But I wouldn't really worry too much if it's always in the 130s. It's more when it gets into the 120s that I would be more concerned.
Well, Dr. Kelly Beers, you are fantastic as always. How do people find out more about Albany Med's Glomerular Disease Center?
So we are at 25 Hackett Boulevard. As I mentioned, you can call our main office, which is a phone number I should probably know.
That's okay. It's something. There's a link on the website.
You can definitely Google it.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. Just look us up. We're there.
Well,
call and ask.
Thank you for coming. Support comes from Woodland Pond at New Paltz, Life Plan Community at the foot of the Schwangunks near Education, the Arts, and Outdoor Activities. Future residency waitlist available. WoodlandPondNP.org. Thanks again to Dr. Kelly Beers of Albany Med for being with us today. Thank you for the great calls and great emails. Apologies if we didn't get to your question. Thanks to Zach Malloy, a wonderful engineer, and most of the time very pleasant. Bob Rathbun screened the calls. Bob, thank you, sir. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we talk car maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. We'll see you at 2:00.